I appreciate all y'all being here, and I'm grateful for another opportunity to speak to you this evening. I'm looking forward to our study tonight. It's going to be a second installment in the book of Ecclesiastes. We'll have some repeat material because he's kind of just starting to introduce the main concepts of this book. But we'll also have some new ideas and some very practical application for us to take from this study to use in our own lives. So I hope it's enjoyable and I hope it's helpful for you this evening. We finished off in our previous study there in chapter 1 and verse 11, just kind of showing who Solomon was, what his perspective was coming into this book, and some of the main themes of the book of Ecclesiastes. And he started to discuss the pointlessness and vanity of physical pursuits. And we go into that a little bit more in this study as well, because he starts to explain his great experiment, which we see throughout Ecclesiastes. And we see that experiment starting in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 12 through 13 says, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised." So here Solomon describes this experiment that he's taking part in. And we see there in verse 12, he kind of re-explains who he is and uses those same kinds of terms that we saw at the very first part of Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the idea of him being king over Israel and Jerusalem, and he refers to himself once again as the preacher, which is the same term that he used in verse 1. We looked at in our previous study how the preacher, or the word translated into preacher here in Ecclesiastes, is one who gathers wisdom and also one who lectures. And Solomon was obviously both of those things in that he was considered the wisest man on earth at this point, but also took the time to explain the things that he had figured out to those around him. He was known for teaching others the wisdom that he had found and valued greatly for that characteristic. And so that kind of describes this term, the preacher. But we also know that he, as the son of David, was the king after David in Israel. Then in verse 13, he starts to explain his experiment. He says, "I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven." So this is kind of the main premise of his experiment. He's seeking out everything that life has to offer, every experience, every possession, everything that life has to offer to a human. And he found that. We discussed a little bit in our previous study as well how that with Solomon's great wisdom and great wealth, he really didn't have to hold back, and it doesn't seem like he did. He could have gotten anything that he wanted, and he really did experience everything that physical life had to offer for him. I want to start off here in verse 13 by looking at this phrase, "I set my heart." You know, Solomon gave his heart to this pursuit, to the pursuit of seeking out what life had to offer, and I want to consider what that means to us. First of all, we have to understand that the heart is unreliable. And we consider this concept a lot, but when we think about Solomon saying, I gave my heart to this pursuit, Solomon was following his own desires and his own wisdom. He was allowing his heart not just to be a factor, but to guide him, his emotions. In Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 7 through 9, it explains the danger of relying on the heart. Jeremiah 17, verse 7 through 9 says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is the Lord. For he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its roots by the river and will not fear when heat comes, but its leaf will be green and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" This passage creates a contrast between those who trust in the Lord and follow him and obey him and the steadfastness that they gain through that pursuit of God and of his desires. It contrasts that against those who follow their hearts, against those who use their hearts as the guiding metric of their lives. And those people have no stability. You know, we read other passages that use this same type of imagery of this tree planted by water, that its roots are always fed, its leaves are always green, it's always bearing fruit, it's always powerful, it's always steadfast. And that's a person that puts their trust in God. But a person who puts their trust in their heart and their feelings and whatever they desire has no foundation. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? We can't even understand the heart. We can't even understand our own hearts. And Solomon was saying, I'm committing to my heart, and I'm committing my heart to this pursuit of physical accomplishment and gain. While the heart is unreliable and unstable, it is also powerful. And when we make a choice to commit our hearts to something, that's a powerful commitment. And that's exactly what Solomon did. In Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, we see the expectation that God has for us to commit our hearts to him. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." You know, the heart's an unreliable thing and shouldn't be followed, but the heart is a powerful part of our being. And when we make a choice to commit that heart to something, that means something. You know, we sometimes think that we guard our hearts and that we're careful with what we commit ourselves to. But I think sometimes we're a little more flippant than we should be about what we are willing to commit our hearts to. You know, I've committed my heart to jobs and to hobbies, and I've made those things my life. And I hope that I've gotten past that to some extent. But we give our hearts out pretty easy. And that's what Solomon was doing too. You know, he saw this opportunity for him to go out and seek out everything that life had to offer, and he gave his heart to it. He wasn't just trying to look at life and consider it, consider the opportunities that life has to offer, and consider that against what God has offered. And we're going to discuss here in a moment how that's a powerful and beneficial examination. He wasn't just looking at life and seeing what it had to offer. He was indulging in everything that life had to offer. And he had given his life and his heart to that pursuit and to that indulgence. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, it tells us again the power of committing your heart to something. It says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And I think this can go the other way as well. Where your heart is, there your treasure will be. You know, whatever we commit our hearts to is where we will store up our treasure. And wherever our treasure is, whatever we've put our effort and our time into, that's where our hearts will be. And Solomon dedicated his time and his effort and his life to this experiment that he made of trying to figure out what life had to offer for him and whether it truly could be fulfilling. Then after he said that he set his heart to this pursuit, he explains what the pursuit is. And he said he was going to search out by wisdom everything done under heaven. You know, I've been trying to understand what kind of wisdom Solomon had, because he was known as the wisest man alive. You know, God told him, "You can ask me for anything you want, anything." And Solomon didn't ask for riches. He didn't ask for a long life. He asked for wisdom. And God said he gave it to him. But the decision to seek and search out and dedicate your heart to this pursuit of all of the indulgences that life has to offer doesn't sound like a very wise decision. God did give Solomon wisdom, but as far as I can understand it, this was a wisdom that he could use one of two ways. Either a wisdom that he could commit to the Lord and following the Lord and use for the glorification of the Lord, or he could use that wisdom that God had given him in a worldly way. And in James chapter 3, verse 13 through 17, it contrasts the spiritual and earthly wisdom. James chapter 3, verse 13 through 17 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy." You know, there's a few interesting terms in this passage. One of the ones I want to focus on is used twice, and that is self-seeking. And I think that's a characteristic that Solomon demonstrated in his effort in this experiment. He wanted to figure out what could make him feel fulfilled, what could make him feel good, what could make him feel powerful or successful. And so he went out into the world to experience everything that it had to offer. And he didn't find it there, but that's seems to be where his heart was, and what he had chosen to use the wisdom that God had given him for is for an earthly pursuit. And on the other hand, I appreciated this term, the meekness of wisdom. You know, we don't see a lot of meek and wise people. We see a lot of people that have a lot of intelligence and understanding about certain things that aren't meek at all. And instead, they're trying to just throw their wisdom at you all the time. You say anything, you may not even be asking them a question. They say, oh, well, this is what I learned about this topic, you know, back in, you know, this year at this university. Let me expound on you all of the knowledge that I have. But that's not wisdom. In God's eyes, wisdom is meek, and wisdom doesn't seek itself or seek its own glorification, and those who are wise don't seek those things, but rather the glorification of God. Solomon said he was seeking out through wisdom, and that he had given his heart to find all that is done under heaven. We read this verse last time, but I want to read it again in Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. I think it explains quite well everything that you can find under heaven. Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, it says, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." You know, this is right after the first sin of Adam and Eve, and this is God's curse on Adam. But this is not just God's curse on Adam himself, but God's curse on mankind for our sin. You know, the curse of in the sweat of your face eating bread till you return to the ground is not something that was exclusive to Adam. That applies to all mankind. You know, whether you're a Christian or not, life is hard, and bad things happen. And I'm not saying that I hate my life or things are bad. I appreciate the blessings that I'm given. But at the same time, bad stuff happens either way. And this passage is explaining that, you know, you sweat and you bleed and you hurt and you try hard and you die. If it's physical, if you're pursuing only physical things, that's all there is to find. And that's what Solomon was looking for. He said, I want to find out what all is under heaven, what all physical pursuits I can find that I can hopefully find some kind of fulfillment from. And he found out that you sweat and you hurt and you bleed and you die. Because that's all there is to find on earth. There was no fulfillment to find. There was no joy to find. He found things that maybe made him feel good about himself for a short time, but this is what he found. It's what Job found too. In Job chapter 14, verses 1 through 2, he says, "Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue." You know, Job was referred to not just as the wisest man on earth. He instead was referred to as the most righteous man on earth. Job had his spiritual life put together. He had put his trust in God, but he was also very wealthy. And apparently he had put some level of stock in the physical possessions that he had. Because when it all got taken away from him, he said, man's a few days and full of trouble. And I don't know that he was necessarily at this point saying, you know, everything I've worked for is pointless and serving God is pointless. We can see that he dedicated himself still to God, but he lost a lot of hope in the time period where he lost his kids, he lost his wife's confidence, he lost his health, he lost all of his servants and his possessions. And he said, man's life is a few days and full of trouble. You know, we like to say, and it's true, as Christians, we've got, you know, something better to look forward to. Life's just hunky-dory because there's eternity. And that's true, but that doesn't change that bad stuff happens and it hurts. And this is not me trying to make you feel down about that or be upset about the things that happen in life, but learn. And that's what Solomon's trying to do too. I don't think he was just saying, for the rest of my life, I'm only going to seek physical things. He was really trying to learn what it all meant and what really mattered. And what he learned, you know, he called it a burdensome task that he was pursuing. Because what he learned is that there's blood, sweat, and tears, and death, and that man's life is a few days and full of trouble if all you seek is the physical. And that's not a bad thing for us to say, that life hurts and sometimes it kicks us back and it's hard. Because what we learn from that is that that's not where our heart should be. Solomon dedicated his heart to that pursuit. And we need to learn from what he's learned and also learn from the experiences that we've had so that we don't dedicate our hearts to the same thing. Solomon made a lot of discoveries in this experiment that he had. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 14 through 15, he says, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. Solomon found out in his experiment trying to find out all of the things that life had to offer, and he saw all the works that are done under the sun. And he said, everything's vanity, it's empty, it's like grasping for the wind. You know, it's windy here all the time. And we understand what that looks like. And we don't run out there and try to catch it, because that makes no sense. It's obviously a futile pursuit, because it's something we can't even understand where it starts and where it ends. And he's saying, looking for fulfillment in the physical life is like trying to catch the wind as it goes by. And I think that's an ample description of how pointless it seems to look for fulfillment and joy in the things that the physical life has to offer. But I want to take a moment to appreciate the perspective that Solomon offers and how we can hopefully do the same kind of thing. He said he had seen everything under the sun. He had seen all the works that are done under the sun, and that's what he learned. And I think we need to take some time to see the works that are done under the sun, not necessarily to give ourselves to those pursuits or to indulge in those things, but to see what life offers, physically and spiritually. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, it says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." You know, I believe that this is what people find if they give an honest examination of the facts. They find that the physical life doesn't have anything to offer to us that lasts. They find that it only has pain and suffering and death to offer. And then because of that, they make the choice to be transformed away from the physical, away from the carnal, to the spiritual, so that they can prove by what they have understood, not just by an assumption, not by something that they're told, not by having blinders on their eyes, but so that they can prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters. And we can prove that only by understanding what life has to offer, both physically and spiritually. You know, there's so many people that say, especially on the evolutionist side of the spectrum, that say, you know, y'all are all just letting some mystical God out there somewhere, and people that say feel good things put blinders over your eyes. But we're not blind. We're not ignoring the facts or the truth. In fact, it's the truth that sets us free. In John chapter 8, verse 31 through 32, it says, "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, 'If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" You know, Solomon learned a lot from his experiment, and he learned that life, this physical life, doesn't have anything to offer to us that lasts. And I don't know really what Solomon's life before and after his experiment looked like, but I know what ours should. You know, if we look at what life has to offer and the pain and the struggle that we have in the physical life and how short our lives are on the whole spectrum of things, and then look at the spiritual and the opportunities that we have and the hope that we have, we're not just putting drapes over our eyes. We're not just blind. We've looked at the facts, and we need to take the time to look, to truly examine what life has to offer, to truly examine what offers us fulfillment, and make a decision. Because it's not lying to yourself that offers you freedom. It's the truth. And if we have the truth and if we have the facts, they will make us free. You know, Solomon found out a lot about the world, and he found out that the world is crooked. And, you know, he said what's crooked can't be made straight. What's lacking can't be filled, can't be numbered. And we understand that from the scripture too. At the very beginning of Scripture, you know, God made mankind and said it was good. It wasn't just good, it was very good. It was exactly how he intended it to be. And then, you know, a couple chapters later, we see the first death of a man, and it's murder. And it's the sons of the first two people that were on the planet. You know, things went downhill pretty quick, didn't they? And then in Genesis 6, 5 through 6, it says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart." The wickedness and evil of man had gone to the point that it was constant, that it never stopped, that humanity's thoughts and intentions were never good. And God was sorrowful at what his creation had turned itself into and what his creation had turned to. You know, that's the same thing that we're seeing today, and that's the same thing that Solomon was seeing. When he looked at the world, he saw things that were crooked, things that were messed up, because we live here and we mess stuff up. And so when Solomon looked at life, he said, things are just ruined. But that doesn't have to be the end of the story. And the Bible tells us that things are ruined for a reason. The world can't be repaired. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 through 17, it says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever." The world passes away either way. You know, we can commit our time and our effort to try to make things better, but the world still falls apart. You know, I appreciate the efforts that people make to try to make the world a better place, to try to provide for those that are hurting, help those who suffer, you know, make it to where we can live better lives, have a better quality of life. I appreciate what those people are doing. But the world's passing away. Fight for it as long as you want, but it's still falling apart. And when Solomon looked at the world and he looked at life and he said, it's crooked and it's messed up and I can't fix it and nobody can fix it, that was true. We can't fix what's messed up in the world. And that's why in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4, it says, "By which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." You get to a point that escape's your only option. And that's not a bad thing, and that's not you running away from your problems. Escape from the physical life and the physical pursuits that we could be chasing is the only option. You know, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have jobs or we shouldn't take care of those around us and we shouldn't have friends outside of the church or anything like that. I'm not saying that. You know, Jesus told his disciples to be in the world and not of the world. We got to stay here and deal with the problems that the world gives us. But that doesn't mean that we have to make the same mistakes that Solomon made and give our hearts to pursuits that can't fulfill us. It's time to escape the corruption that's in the world and to take our hearts back from those who want to steal it. They haven't earned our hearts or our commitment, but God has. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 16 through 18, Solomon explains the practical lessons that he had learned from his experiment. Ecclesiastes 1, 16 through 18 says, "I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." You know, we again have a pretty depressing sounding answer that Solomon's coming up with here. You know, he says, "I looked at everything life has to offer, everything under the sun, everything under heaven. I've given it my all to examine these things, and this is what I found. The more I learned, the more I hurt." The fact that life is a lot of sweat, blood, sweat, and tears, and then you die, didn't change when Solomon got smarter. It didn't change when Solomon figured out everything there was to know about the physical life. The fact that the physical life cannot fulfill us didn't change the more Solomon knew about it. You know, you think about the concept of the more you learn, the less you realize you know. I think that's what Solomon was feeling here. The more he learned, the more he realized he didn't have the answers and that he wasn't going to find them no matter how much he gave himself to physical pursuits. He wasn't going to find the answers. And we're not going to find the answers either unless we take the time to do some self-examination and some examination of the world around us like he did. He said he communed with his heart. We got to take the time for learning. In Psalms chapter 4 and verse 4, it says, "Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still, Selah." You know, I think a lot of us can relate on the idea of always wanting to be doing something. You know, me and Barry were talking before services about how jittery we get sometimes. You know, I was sitting here in church this morning, like, almost feeling claustrophobic because I get jittery and I want to do something. And I feel like if I sit too long, I just freak out a little bit because I want to be doing something. Barry was talking about not being able to sleep because you got just something on your mind. And I find that too. Sometimes you just get so worked up about something you forgot to do before you went to sleep. You just get out of bed and you go do it. And you're not going to be able to sleep until you do that. You know, we freak out about the stuff that we've got going on in life. And we get so busy pursuing everything we've got on our plates. And I'm not saying that those things are not important. But if you get so busy with whatever you're pursuing that you can't sit and think for a minute and learn from what life is telling you, then you need to slow down. And the psalmist here says, commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. It's hard for us to be still. And it's hard for us to think. I know a lot of people, and I think I fall into this category sometimes too, of people that, you know, they don't slow down because they don't want to think and they don't want to feel, because actually thinking and learning and growing from the things that life is telling you is the thing that hurts the most. And it's easier to just kick it into high gear and work yourself to death than actually slow down and use your brain. You know, Solomon may have not done everything the right way. And I think he committed himself too much to this pursuit and indulged himself in physical things when he shouldn't have. But he learned a lesson that we should learn too. And we're not going to learn it until we slow down and start looking at the lessons that life is trying to teach us. You know, Solomon had a possibility of taking the wrong perspective on what he had learned and what he had gained. You know, Solomon had not just gained wisdom, but he'd gained wealth in his pursuits. And in Luke chapter 12, verse 16 through 21, it says, "And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." You know, Solomon was in grave danger of letting his wisdom that he had gained, his knowledge he had gained, and his wealth get to his head and get him bogged down in the physical things of this life. You know, this man in this parable had great gain, and he said, "Now's the time to kick back and take things easy, because I got it made. I got it all taken care of." And he says to his soul, "Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." You know, Solomon had enough laid up that he could have said the same thing. He could have said, "You know what? Life's good. I've got all the wealth I could ever want. I've got wisdom and knowledge. I know how to handle what life throws at me. Life's good." And he could have said, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry for the rest of my life, because I got it figured out and I got it made." But he said, "Life means nothing if this is all there is to it." So we know he had something figured out when he said that. Instead of saying, "All this wealth and wisdom that I gained is enough for me," he said, "This will never fill the hole that's in me. This will never fulfill what I need. In Psalms chapter 52, verses 6 through 7, it talks about those who trust in themselves. It says, the righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him, saying, here is the man who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. You know, we have a lot of opportunities in this life, and I think we're all well off, relatively speaking. And we can look at our gain and our physical success and say, this is enough for me. Or we can look at it and say, this will never be enough for me, like Solomon did. Say that the physical things will never satisfy. They'll never be enough. And I've got to turn somewhere else. You know, that passage that we looked at about being transformed, not being conformed to the world, not being conformed to our own desires and our own perception of what physical life has to offer, but being transformed from that. That's what Solomon chose. He chose to say, this is not what I want. And we have an opportunity to be transformed from the struggles of life so that we can prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God, so that we can follow and trust in him rather than trusting in our own wisdom. You know, I don't want to be the guy that the righteous look at, see, fear, and laugh, and say, that's the guy that trusted in himself and didn't trust in God, didn't put his hope in God, and now he has nothing. That's not the man that I want to be. I want to be the man that at the end of the day, when I die, people don't say, well, he's leaving everything behind. They say, he didn't have anything here. His treasure wasn't here. His treasure's in heaven. And he's going to take part in the treasure that he laid up for himself. You know, if you trust in yourself, you'll never have treasure beyond this life. But if you trust in God, you won't need treasure in this life, because you'll have all your treasure in heaven. I want to read one final passage this evening. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, it says, my son, forget not my law. And remember that this is Solomon speaking here in Proverbs. Forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel, and marrow to thy bones. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Solomon here says, don't forget the laws of the Lord, and let your heart keep his commandments. Let your heart keep the words of the Lord. You know, Solomon said that he gave his heart to seek out everything that life had to offer. He committed his heart and his time to that pursuit and to that experiment. And here he says, don't let your heart go away from the commandments of the Lord. Don't take your heart away from what God has told you to do. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean on your own understanding. It's easy to lean on our own understanding. It's easy to think that we've got it all figured out. It's easy to think that we can find everything that we need in this life, but we can't. And if we trust in our own hearts, and if we trust in ourselves, and we seek out everything that we can find in this life, we'll come up short, and we'll come up empty. And Solomon says, don't take your hearts away from the commandments of the Lord and trusting in him. You know, it's not a bad thing to have substance, to have physical possessions, but it all goes to the same place, and our efforts all go to the honor of the same God. He says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. I don't know whether Solomon made all the right decisions that he should have or not. I don't know where his heart was necessarily in the long term when he committed his heart for that time in this experiment of seeking and searching out everything that life had to offer. But I know what our discovery should be based on his experiment. And not just based on his experiment, based on ours. You know, we haven't said, I'm going to conduct this experiment and I'm going to try out everything that life has to offer. But we've all tried out a lot of things that life has to offer. You know, I've at times given my heart to things that should have never had my heart. Not just things that are harmless pastimes, but things that are blatantly against the will of God. And I think we all have. We've given our hearts to things that go directly against the commandments and instructions of God because we trust in ourselves. You don't have to conduct this full-fledged experiment to understand and experience everything that life has to offer to see the truth. And that truth sets you free. And that truth is that life hurts. And if you give everything that you have to physical pursuits, you come up empty. And if you give everything to God, you'll never be empty. Jesus said, I offer you a water that just keeps flowing. This isn't a water that you're going to have to come back to the well and fill up your bucket again. It's just an overflowing water so that you can be not just full, but overflowing to the brim. Life leaves you empty, and God leaves you full. And if you're empty tonight, we want to help you pursue what makes you full. Because God's offered you another option. You know, there's no other option, good option, but escape from the world and the things that it offers. But God's given you something to escape to. We want to help you find that this evening. If you know the gospel tonight and you want to be baptized, or if you need to understand the gospel and seek that direction to God and to the fulfillment that he offers, we want to help you. Or if you're a Christian and you're struggling to really find your purpose and your drive to trust in the Lord with all your heart, and you find your heart seeking out other things that aren't fulfilling you, we want to help you as well. If there's one of either class, please come while we stand and sing.